Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. That debt, that debt is fraud. In other words, when the government spends money on something they have no authority in the Constitution to do, then we the people are not liable for that. We've only given them the authority to spend on very specific things. So, if a foreign nation comes along and says, we're going to buy your debt, and it is upon that foreign nation, it's upon whoever is going to finance government spending, because that's what they're doing by taking on debt. If they're financing the government who is recklessly and deliberately spending money on things they have no authority to do, then they're equally liable in and duplicit in the fraud of we the people. Now, this goes back to court cases. Let me just give you some history on this, folks. Because in America, and this happened in Washington State, by the way, there was a committee that didn't have the authority to actually award a contract, but there was a committee that had the ability to basically send out proposals. And so they sent out, this committee sent out a proposal on doing a energy plant, like a nuclear power plant or what have you. And so they were getting bids for this proposed power plant that it looked like the state was going to go ahead and do. Well, they found a really good bid, and the committee went ahead without the authority, and allegedly without the authority. I mean, nobody crossed any T's. In other words, the company that went into, you know, that won this bid supposedly, and I think that they won the bid, but they didn't have the authority to award the contract, and this committee went ahead and awarded, or actually told the company to go ahead and start because we're going to do this. Well, the state or what have you, because I don't know the details, but I remember hearing this. And actually, the interesting thing is Bob Schultz was the one that told me about this. Bob Schultz of the We the People Foundation. You know, God bless that man's soul. That being said, the state actually started looking at, and they never truly awarded the contract. And I don't know if the committee was, you know, apprised of the fact that they weren't going to award the contract, because they never told the company who was executing supposedly under good faith that they had been, they did receive that contract. And so they started, you know, breaking ground. They started, and they got so far in, and based on the contract, once they spent a certain amount of money and, you know, reached very specific milestones or objectives within the contract, they were to be paid. So they came to the state to say, okay, we've, you know, poured the foundation, we've done this. Whatever it was that they did, they came to the state and said, okay, we're ready to be paid. And this is when they learned, oh, well, we never awarded that contract and we're not paying you. Well, the company actually took the state to court. And they ended up losing because, bottom line, the court held them responsible for ensuring that they were working with an agent that actually had the authority to give them the legitimate contract. In other words, when a bank is going to mortgage or give you a loan for your home, they need to know, and it's their responsibility to make sure that you have a legal, you know, deed, you are the legal owner and so forth, which is why I scratch my head. How is it that people are losing their homes from, what do you want to call it, title theft, when people go out and just duplicate and claim that they own your home and go and get loans against your home? How in the heck does that happen? Why is it that the courts will look blindly one way, and yet they will actually hold up the rule of law, you know, when it comes down to, you know, coming out of their pockets or what have you? They'll do the right thing. And so, bottom line, whoever is absolutely throwing the money out there, they have the onus, they have the burden to ensure that the money that they're giving is going to legitimate spending, because if it's going towards fraud and or commissions of a crime or what have you, then they can be equally held accountable for the crime that they're funding or the harm that they're doing, especially if they know that is happening. If they claim innocent, the fact is they will not get a penny. The fact is that they have the onus to ensure that the money that they're paying or buying in debt of a government is legitimate debt. That when the government is actually and flagrantly spending money on things they have no authority to spend, like our governments are in the United States, state governments, county governments, they're spending away, and this goes back to this, I'm really bad with names, forgive me, Cloward and Piven or what have you. What is it, Sean?
Cloward Piven.
What is it?
Cloward Piven.
Cloward Piven, thank you. And welcome back, by the way.
Thank you, sir.
And so when they're doing those types of things, they become complicit in the crime. So I can't emphasize this enough. That debt is fraud. Because when we look at how much money is actually being spent on legitimate functions of the federal government, legitimate functions, you know, like most people look at, you know, the Department of Defense, well, that's got to all be legitimate. Technically, no. Money that we're spending on housing and keeping Army, Air Force, facilities across the United States, across the world, in foreign nations, we don't have the authority to do that. Our government doesn't have the authority to do that. That's all fraud. So the level of fraud is when you sit down and you look at, and this can easily be done, folks, when we look at, because they have a money trail. Where did that money go? How did they spend? How did DOD spend? How did Department of Defense? Yeah. All of these things, when we start identifying that's legitimate, the rest of this isn't, and we look at the revenue that the United States has been making off of the income tax alone and these other legitimate forms of revenue, they've had more than enough money to cover the costs of running the United States. Putting aside the war debts, the cost of the war, even though the wars, when we look at World War I and World War II, those were illegitimate wars. They didn't have the authority to execute those wars, to go overseas and to do those things in supporting supposedly the cause of liberty. As noble and as honorable as it might have been, going into Vietnam, going into Korea. So when we look at what we've been spending and what you and I believe we owe, folks, I'm here to tell you, we don't owe that money. Sadly, that's just the truth. That's just where we are today. So with that all being said, what I want to do is I want to do kind of a real focus on, you know, this whole problem that we have regarding our government. And so I know that we're covering the ratification debates and we're in the middle of the Massachusetts debates. And so I've kind of tipped Sean off to let him know, hey, and Sean, it's no secret. I mean, what we're trying to do and what, you know, we have been working on is about constitutional compliance. I mean, I constantly say this at the beginning. Folks, we have a self-governing system, and folks, we actually have this responsibility of holding our government. When I say holding our government, I mean our public servants. What that means, folks, is your legislators have all of the authority to do what needs to be done. They have the authority to redress grievances. They have the authority to regulate the courts. They have the authority to hold the executives accountable. Via impeachment, using Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, our representatives can and should be doing all of the things that need to be done to get this government back. That's why we're a Republican form of government. And the fact that everybody buys into this idea that, oh, well, we got to go to the courts. No, absolutely not. This is why we go through all of these different documents. Madison and Jefferson proved this, that interposition via the legislatures at the state level, at the county level, what have you, in getting government accountable to the Constitution. That's what we need to be focused on. That's what we need to be doing. This is why I go out of my way to ask and beg and plead that you would support Jerry Winstrand in his campaign. Now, I've talked to Jerry, just had a conversation with him, and unfortunately, he hasn't gotten a dime. Now, I wish I could do this. I cannot openly provide a candidate any money, any funding personally. Not that I have lots of money, because I don't make money off of this show. But I am telling you that, and I've supported, and hopefully, I think I'd make the case, Sean, that if we're not supporting champions on the Constitution, then we're never going to get this constitutional republic back. You know, as long as we continue to support what I call political theatrics, we're going to watch everything just get worse, worse, and worse, and worse, and there is no end to this until we either capitulate or we fall into the arms of global communism. Your two cents.
Agreed, sir. We have to find champions that are going to honor their oath, and we have to support them. Yes. Otherwise, the people who want to subvert and go around the rules and the laws are going to do what they want.
So today, this show, I want to kind of focus on Washington State, because Washington State is kind of an exemplar in political problems. And it's not unique or alone, because there's other states that have a very similar situation. Now, I have said this, and I've said this in interviews and so forth, that when you look at the political monopoly that the parties have in controlling who obtains access to these political seats, in other words, the way they endorse, the way they support, and the way the politicians actually protect themselves. As a matter of fact, you know, you would think that it would be an oxymoron to say, well, we want the party to actually endorse candidates before the primary. Most people think, oh, no, you don't want that. Well, actually, what we want is we want to start supporting candidates who test the best on a constitutional test. I don't think you need to have, you know, a primary. As a matter of fact, I'm an advocate of actually getting every state to change their parameters, that you shouldn't even be able to get your name on a ballot if you can't at least get 50% of a constitutional test correct. It's like you can't plumb in my house if you don't know the differences between the different tools, the different, you know, if you don't know plumbing, at least, you know, at a 50% capacity, aptitude, so forth, then you have no business coming into my home. And we should all have that same paradigm, that no public servant or no person should actually be able to become a public servant if they can't pass at least 50% test in understanding the Constitution. So the intent is to get states, and we're actually working with Wyoming, trying to get South Dakota, Wyoming, and a few other states, Washington being another one, to start implementing tests to basically have the party call all this. It doesn't matter. Let's just say you live in Jefferson County and you've got different candidates from independent, Democrat, Republican, running for both federal, all three, federal, state, and county, or local, all four types of positions, that you're going to have to take an oath to serve in the capacity of that position. And I believe if you're an elected person, you need to be under the oath, period. And that's when we look at the actual first act, the very first act Congress did in 1789, the very first year Congress was in existence, the U.S. Congress, the first act they passed was the act of administering and managing the oath of office. And they made sure that every person that was receiving tax dollars as an employee had to take an oath to support the Constitution. So looking at today, those people that have to take that oath should at least have to at least pass a test to understand what it means to support the Constitution. Because if you don't know, then you are actually could become complicit in violating your oath. This is why it's important that they do know, because we need to hold them accountable, which is kind of what we were just talking about, holding public servants accountable. You know, as novel as the concept is, it is that simple. Hold people accountable. There's so many people today that want to see, you know, the Democrats, they want to see their evil villains, their nemesis, their political nemesis, do the perp walk wearing orange and handcuffs, because we want to see vengeance. I am here to tell you that we should be demanding full compliance. It doesn't matter if they're our guy or their guy. It does not matter. When we get to this point, when we shift our focus and say, you're in public service, you are legally bound to support that Constitution, actively support that Constitution, then we have every expectation that you do that. If not, you're gone. It should be that simple. And it should be that simple because that's what the law demands. Anybody that's listened to this show, we've covered all of this, which is why we're going to try to cover this in this one episode. Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, go read it, folks. It basically says anybody in public office except for the president and the vice president, it mentions senators, jurists, judges, federal, state, it doesn't matter whether it's federal, state, senators, representatives, if you're under oath to support that Constitution and the Constitution is getting violated by a public servant, not you, but by somebody else, you are obligated to call that person out and say, hey, what you are proposing is a violation of the Constitution. You need to know the Constitution to that level to be able to do that. Therefore, you should be, and that's how we protect ourselves, by creating this automated process, this engagement, this positive, or I should say, what did I call it? Active support to recognize the violations, to step up and say, that is a violation. You are in violation, therefore you must be removed. Section 3 of the 14th Amendment demands that when a person makes that commitment of violating their oath or failing to support the Constitution, in other words, let's say you're a public servant and let's say you don't know the Constitution and somebody has violated it, but other people do know it, and because you haven't joined in holding that person accountable, you too stand in jeopardy of being removed because you're not a part of the movement of holding people accountable. That's how important Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is. And when you really look at, you know, what Section 3 of the 14th Amendment offers today, I have to ask the question, because we can go through the legitimacy of the 14th Amendment and prove it outright. It doesn't matter. And what kills me is that there's so many people that believe the misinformation and they refuse to actually do the full due diligence in looking at the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment was legitimately passed. It was challenged and challenged and challenged. And instead of being able to overturn the 14th Amendment because three states tried to nullify or tried to go back, Ohio, Oregon, and I forget what the other, I think New Jersey, were the three union states, because There was more than ample union states that passed it. And even those three union states did not, if they could get away from, or if they could have got away with actually undoing the ratification of the 14th Amendment, there still would have required one other state to do it if they could have done that. But Congress came back and said, that's not within that amendment for you to basically pass and then, you know, unratify. To ratify and then unratify. Once you've rung the bell, you can't unring it. So pay attention next time, and let's just move forward because you've already rang the bell, you've ratified it, and unless the language is there, we're not going to allow you to do that. And therefore, when we look at, you know, these three states that backed out or tried to back out, it's a done deal. But even if the language was there and allowed them to back out, we still needed at least one more state to actually unratify, because there was ample states that ratified it in the union to meet the three-fourths threshold. To be clear, the southern states, the Confederacy states, were not considered a part of the Union. They weren't in the United States. They were just conquered territories based on the war because they left the United States. They seceded. And the radical Republicans weren't under Lincoln's control anymore. They said, look, you guys left. And we're not letting you come back in until either, one, you either ratify it and you can come in, and or two, you wait until the 14th Amendment is fully ratified, then we'll start letting you in if you want to come in. Now, going through the 14th Amendment is a show in itself, but the fact is that Section 3, just looking at what this does, how is this not the most important part? People look at the Bill of Rights as, oh, this is the most sacred part of the Constitution, they adore their protection of their religious freedom. I can tell you, folks, that there's no greater part of the Constitution than our ability to hold public servants legally and morally accountable to their oath of office so that when they cross that line, they're gone. There's no due process. There is no, oh, well, did you want to think about that? You want to do that over again? No. You violate your oath, you are ineligible. That's exactly what Section 3 does. It makes you ineligible to be in office. The only way that you can become eligible again, and this is in Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, it's the very last part of removing this disability of your ineligibility, is for both houses of Congress, two-thirds of both houses of Congress, the House of Representatives and the Senate, need two-thirds to pass or basically vote to allow you to become a public servant or capable of becoming a public servant again, period. How is this not the most important part of the Constitution? Now, Sean, I know you've kind of worked and looked at this. I would love to have you expand. What do you think? I mean, I say that this is the most important part, but by all means, it's subjective. So what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, it's definitely important. And after what happened in the Civil War, it made it even more relevant. And what we have today is a perfect example of when this portion of the Constitution should be enforced. Because, I mean, look at all the sanctuary cities and states that we have in the country that are just in full rebellion and insurrection of federal law.
Right.
And we see Americans being the victims, American citizens being victimized by these invaders, and the government is protecting the violent criminals instead of protecting the citizens. And if that's not insurrection, I mean, I don't know what is.
Okay, so Sean, we're going into break right now. So when we come back, because I want to give you more than ample time to rant on this, because I'll give us a precursor coming back, because it's all about doing those things you have the authority to do. And that was the whole point of the Constitution. That's why we're going through the ratification base. But folks, when we come back, we'll talk more about this and we'll dive into Section 3. We'll be right back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so Sean, I'm sorry for the interruption. We had a hard break, but let's bring this back. And looking, what I was trying to say, and again, this is subjective. When we look at the Constitution, had people understood that the federal government and our state government, and if you had constitution for your county, our government's authority is based on those powers we've delegated. They have no authority to operate outside the Constitution, which is why I kind of expounded on the fraud, because they're exercising powers that they do not have delegated. We do not have general powers. They can't just go in and operate on political theatrics, which is the next topic for this part of the show, because that's exactly what we're getting in Washington. That's exactly what we get from the party and so forth. So go ahead, and if you've got any saved rounds or what have you, as you were saying about Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, because accountability is the whole secret and the whole problem why we can't get our government back. Go ahead.
Well, like you're talking about, they can't spend money that hasn't been appropriated, and that appropriation has to be in line with the enumerated powers. And all of these things that we see, the fraud in Minnesota, the fraud in California, and today the big deal they're coming out with Ohio and New Jersey, and all these different places where the federal money, the treasury, is just being siphoned by people who do not even belong in the country. You know, that's one of their methods for breaking down the country and demoralizing the populace is you don't get American citizens to defraud the government. You bring in these foreigners and set them up to defraud the country so you can get a little cut off of what they're stealing. And the states just go along with it, and they cry about, oh, it's racism if you say somebody from Somalia was defrauding the government. And it's just ridiculous. And just like you were talking about, all of the political rhetoric is just a joke. And the two sides are like two sides of the same coin.
Right, yes.
Because the Republicans refuse to do anything about it. They want to make everybody on their side, oh, yeah, come and vote for us because we're telling you what's wrong and we're acting like we're on your side. But they're not. They're just yapping on social media and on the news. I'm so frustrated with that. All these senators, they are every day they got two or three X posts where they're like, we have to have the SAVE Act. We have to stop this fraud. Who are you talking to?
Right.
You're the ones that are in charge of stopping it. So why are you not?
Right. And actually, they have the authority. Congress has the authority to do three things. They have the authority to basically call forth the time, place, and manner of an election when necessary by law. It's right there in Article 1. In other words, they usually never do it. They did it to establish, and we covered this as well. So let me kind of unwind this so that I can really start focusing. Because, folks, what we have in Washington State is the chair of the state party is also, I believe, the majority Republican leader for not the majority, but the minority, because Washington is predominantly blue. It's got nothing but Democrats in both houses is ruling it. And the chair happens to be, I believe, the leader of the Republicans in the House of Representatives. James Walsh is his name. And so he's both a politician and he happens to be a party leader. He's the chair of the party. Well, the party's job, I've said this, you have to have a complete separation from the grassroots and those people in power. Because it is the grassroots job to have the unpleasant conversations, the difficult conversations with those people in office to say, you're not doing your job. Now, how is it that somebody in office can tell themselves, I'm not doing my job, when they have no, I mean, it boggles my mind how people think that even ethics can maintain some kind of similitude of order when it can't. Madison clearly stated no man should ever be a judge of himself, because when he does, he will justify to the ends. To whatever his ends are, he will justify his way all the way, as long as he can be the judge of himself. And this is where absolute power corrupts. When you understand that if you're the judge of yourself and you have that level of authority, that is absolute power. And when you're sitting in this little vacuum of political theatrics as a politician and the chair of the party, there's no accountability. Nobody holds it just can't happen. At least, I think it can't happen unless you're an angel, because Madison basically said that, you know, if men were angels, we wouldn't need government. But because men aren't angels, we need to have a government that at least has these checks and balances. And when you actually have somebody that is literally on two separate sides of a line, then you're a fool to believe you have accountability. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
So, not that, you know, Jim Walsh isn't a good guy. He may be a good guy. And I've actually gone out, and I want to be clear here. There is no legitimacy to political theatrics or politics. As a matter of fact, the Constitution makes unconstitutional politics illegal. What is politics? Politics is the art of compromise between two sides and coming to an agreement. Well, okay, what that means and what I said is the Constitution only allows you to make political compromise regarding the delegated powers. If you're making political compromise over the Department of Transportation, like infrastructure, well, you have no authority in the Constitution to do that, but you agree to compromise and you grant yourself that, you are in direct violation. In other words, your compromise, your politics has now been outlawed, or you've committed a crime politically. Because political compromise is only allowed within our constitutional republic, within those very few enumerated powers. So when we look at what our politicians, James Walsh, to be specific, it's his job as somebody under oath to be calling out the governor of Washington State, who has been running an insurrection in so many different directions against the people and against the Constitution, committing warfare. And when I say warfare, allowing the taxation to be, you know, to allow the state to continually spend money on things it has no authority to do, and then go and implement unconstitutional taxes. They passed this income tax, which is in violation of the Washington State Constitution. And so as this all peels out, they're going to get away with this because they're in control. And because the paradigm is that as long as they have a majority, the compromise of whatever they're compromising that's not within the Constitution, they're going to get away with it. This is why I tell you that the most important part of our governing system is accountability to those few and defined powers that we've delegated. If they're operating outside the powers, they need to be held accountable and removed immediately. This is the beautiful thing about Section 3. Why isn't Section 3 enforced in the states? Why is not one state enforcing Section 3? Because if Section 3 in the state of Washington was being enforced, Jim Walsh would be able to remove Governor Inslee, Governor Ferguson, all of these governors who've been allowing invaders to come in and get IDs to vote. Allowing, you know, the federal government to basically adjoin to these climate changes, these climate accords, what have you. And yet we see the Democrats in Washington State violating the Constitution and claiming that they're joining with the Paris Accords. That directly violates the Constitution. In 2023, the state of Washington legislature literally voted to allow themselves to legalize a digital currency. The digital currency bill passed. Jim Walsh was in the committee on that. And not once in any of his diatribe in calling out the left for what they just did, not once did he mention that they directly violated the Constitution. Because in Article 1, Section 10, no state shall make anything other than gold or silver coin to be the legal tender for the payment of debt. That bill just allowed digital currency to become the legal tender for the payment of debt. In other words, everybody that voted for it directly violated their oath. And why did Jim Walsh not call him out for it? Because he doesn't want to be called out for his violations. This becomes the honor among thieves. This becomes the epitome of corruption when nobody wants to be held accountable. Now, everybody out, I would think that all the voters would want, but we actually have communists in the state of Washington who are willingly and demanding that these guys be allowed to violate the Constitution and run their insurrections. Anybody that is in favor of that is and should be basically stripped of their citizenship. They are in direct violation as well as an insurrectionist in supporting these insurrections against the Constitution. Folks, the oath of a citizen legally and morally requires all of us, whether you've taken that oath or not, if you're born a citizen, you are still bound by that oath. And you are legally bound by that oath. How? Because every state still has because the Constitution really still requires the militia to be formed and the people be called up for the militia. Even though they've implemented an unconstitutional process, the Constitution's never changed. And the states are still morally and legally bound by that same Constitution that they provide the militia when necessary. They think that, oh, well, with the way they're doing this is legitimate, but no. The fact is every state must and actually has to, if required, to demand that you take up arms to support and defend not the president, not your party, not, you know, the federal government or, you know, the flag. Our legal obligation to support and defend that Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. In other words, it all focuses, again, back to constitutional compliance. If we see citizens that are actually running insurrections against the Constitution, demanding Sharia law, no Islamist can actually be a U.S. citizen because they're actually running an insurrection against the Constitution by demanding Sharia law. Folks, when you get this epiphany, when you start realizing how divine this system has been and how we've just ignored it because of our illiteracy, because we haven't taken the time to connect the dots, I'll just say you get this warm rush. You start realizing, oh my gosh, we've had the answer all along, and it's been right here in front of us. We are, as a nation, we are supposed to be functioning and operating on strictly this one thing, that everything must be done in compliance of the Constitution when it comes to our government, period. We have to hold them accountable. So let me get my blood pressure down and let me catch my breath. Sean, by all means, go ahead and rant or anything you want to add to this at this point.
Well, I think you're making a good point on the parties and how they're how they've captured the electoral system, and it's like a club. And like you said, they honor among thieves. As long as you allow me to do these unethical and immoral acts that are against the Constitution, then I won't hold your feet to the fire. I mean, perfect example is this whole issue that's going on with the Minnesota representative, Ilhan Omar. The vice president himself and many other people in the administration, as well as in Congress, have stated publicly that this person who was elected as a representative to the state of Minnesota is here illegally and broke federal immigration laws in order to get her citizenship. And now she's a member of Congress, and they have all this documentation, and they refuse to release it because they know if they release that, then it's going to turn back on them and their little secrets are going to be put out, regardless of whether it has anything to do with the same or not. So they'd rather just leave things as the status quo. And it, like I said, it's just ridiculous, the point where you see our representatives, our elected officials on social media, which is pretty much the public square nowadays, and they're just lying right through their teeth to everybody, and then they go back in their office and do nothing about the things that they're complaining about. It's like a faux rage or a faux whatever you want to call it, where they're just pretending like they're upset in order to, you know, yes, appease their base.
So the webbing that they're dealing with, if you start cutting any line in their web, it will expose other lines, which will expose other lines, which eventually, it won't take long for any astute mind to start realizing the magnitude of the sham that they have pulled over us, the duplicity and the fraud. I've been saying this, folks, at the beginning of every show, that debt is fraud. All of the money, practically all of the money they're spending, is on illegitimate things. The money that's been going into everybody's pocket. And here's the thing that's incredible. We are still functioning as a nation, even though we have this spiraling debt. We're still functioning as a nation because we're still able to service the interest on that thing. And we're getting closer and closer to the point where we can't. The next financial crisis, I'm being a prognosticator here, the next financial crisis will create a calamity that will go into the Senate, where the Senate will actually go into a negotiation of a treaty to literally set the United States Constitution aside so that we will not be foreclosed on as a nation, that will go into conservatorship, and that, you know, we'll all be protected because all nations have this same black plague of debt. Folks, I'm here to tell you, they have no authority to make or be involved in that treaty, just like they had no authority to be involved in the treaty that subjugated us to the UN. If you want to read these constitutional arguments, go to our petitions page on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The petition number 2 will clearly show you that the Senate can only make treaties that are within the enumerated powers delegated to them. Nowhere did we give them the power to subjugate us to a foreign nation. If they fail us, it goes back to we become independent states. It's not that they sell us downstream, states and all. This is why every state needs to understand this, and every state needs to start taking their suffrage back in that U.S. Senate, which is another thing that we've been... This is not a video show because you barely see me. My face is so dark blue that with a black background, you'd only see my eyes and teeth. I've been saying this and have been saying this, and I am blue in the face. Folks, prove me wrong. I bet my life on this. I've gone through these documents, and there's no one that can prove by any primary source document I am wrong. And this is so simple because it's not rocket science. If there were assertions that supported the court system having the powers that they're exercising, then I would be the first one to admit it. And believe it or not, when I believed in the Federalist Papers, I had to admit that the Federalist Papers were legitimate. And that, you know, what Hamilton was saying, okay, you know, I didn't like it. But now that I've read the ratification debates, I already saw the contrast. But two, three years ago, when I discovered that the Federalist Papers were the poisonous pill, that what was written was done literally as a duplicit move. It was literally a subversive move against the Constitution by Hamilton. And the Federalist Papers cannot and should not and never should have had any legitimate weight in scoring what that Constitution means at all, period. Which is one of the reasons why I'm writing the article I am today. I don't care. I really don't care what happens. The truth has to come out that if we're going to take this nation back, it cannot be through the courts because the courts themselves are corrupt. Our politicians, until we start holding them accountable, until they're willing to hold each other accountable, we're screwed. And until we actually start taking back the U.S. Senate and holding them accountable, this, you know, the common word I keep using here, folks, is what? Sean, what's the one word I keep using?
Compliance.
Accountable.
Right.
That right there is the key. And, you know, when you really think about it, how divine is accountability? Are we to be held accountable to him?
Absolutely.
How divine is accountability? When you start understanding, you know, what we have as a system and what he gave us, the fact that Section 3 exists, it just blows me away. This is one of the reasons why both the left and the right started working ardently way back then, both parties, because they did everything they could to try to keep the 14th Amendment from being legitimized. They've even doctored documents. They've even tried to doctor the congressional record, or not even doctor. They've come right out and they've literally lied in presentations and deception in the U.S. Congress regarding the illegitimacy of the 14th Amendment. Why? Because they can get away with it. They get up there, they do a presentation, nobody holds them accountable. But I'm here to tell you, folks, that when you understand accountability and you start demanding accountability, you will become the pariah of your community. How dare you? You know, who are you? And you know what? Next thing you know, they're going to start examining you and they're going to start calling you out for, you know, your atrocities and call you a hypocrite. And don't let that happen. Folks, there's a huge difference. We're all sinners. There's no person that's here perfect. The fact is we have to be holding each other accountable. It's okay to say, you know what? You know, what you're doing, that's just wrong. Well, you know, you're getting mad at somebody calling people names, that's just wrong. We all should be working on getting to that higher road in life. Nobody's on that ultimate high road. I don't know anybody that's perfect. But when we actually start holding people accountable to what really matters, especially those in office, this is why I say, and people, conservatives look at me like, oh, what a pariah. I really don't care what your religious affiliations are. I don't even care about your sexual orientation. I only care that in every capacity you fully comply to your oath of office. If we do that, and we get everybody in 100% compliance to everything that they're doing, it changes everything. Because eventually, those people who are in questionable orientations sexually, those people who are gambling, those people who are engaged in some form of entrepreneurial efforts of sin, like gambling, porn, what have you, those things will go away. Because I've even told you that when we actually hold accountability and we get government to actually stay within the boundaries, we can actually start enlightening ourselves and we can start going back down the enlightened path. The difference in an enlightened path is discipline from what we're on today, because you have to start disciplining yourself to realize that these types of things, these temporary rewards that we get in life from feeling good, from winning, making money, these types of things are not the things that get us into heaven. These are not the things that, you know, aggrandize us spiritually. We have to start pursuing those types of things. And I truly believe that when we look at a society that is disciplined, there are far less billionaires and there is far less desire for people to become that obscenely wealthy, because one would be more than sufficiently satisfied with having their desires and their needs taken care of. It's just that when we allow our desires to get away with us because we have no discipline. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
So when we look at Washington State, I want to close on this. When we look at what Washington State is doing, because Jim Walsh is now trying to run for governor, he's basically it's 2 years out. The 2026 election for governor, he's now challenging and wanting to engage in this debate. He's not calling the governor out. If he wants to have a campaign, I'm calling him out right now. He needs to actually stand up and call that governor out for every violation of the Constitution. Anything less, to me, is political theatrics and political compromise. And folks, we deserve accountability. We deserve public servants that are doing and fulfilling their oath of office in actively supporting the Constitution. The rest of the time is yours, Sean. Thank you.
Thanks for giving me notice there, brother.
It's a half a minute or whatever, right? Maybe a minute or two. Go ahead. Go ahead. I mean, these are things I can easily just ramble on passion and actually never have enough time, because it is that spiritual side of doing what's right, doing what we've been given. You know, these people are in office. They're not. We have a political system of aristocracy. These people believe they're above us. They're almost the same as minor royalty because they're above the law when they're actually our public servants.
Pestilential breath of faction.
There we go. So, and actually, folks, if you haven't read Washington's farewell address regarding parties and factions, we have to start understanding the peril that we stand in when we allow the party to drive these little political compromises for whatever noble purposes or not. We have to stop it immediately and start demanding accountability and full compliance. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description version of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.